I mean, yes, it would be a lie to say that I didn't feel any inferiority complex to like other established international schools in Korea. Would still like to say that I wasn't aware of that a lot because I think it's just a different type of school. So these schools in the GEC, these schools were established with a some sort of a special law, Korean government law. And so these international schools, once you graduate from these international schools, you get both Korean and US high school degree. Of course, it would be different from for NLCS and Branksome, but anyways, for KIS at least, we get both Korean and US high school degree. For other international schools outside of Jeju, they are all considered foreign schools. So you don't.
Welcome to Tokyo Alumni Podcast, episode 65. Today is our first guest to be outside of the Tokyo Alumni Network. We have a guest from Korea today. This is also the first episode we are airing not through Zoom, but in person. Given the COVID times, though, we have a plexiglass between us and a good 2 meters or so. Our guest today is a graduate of the Korea International School Jeju, a class of 2016. Upon graduating KIS, he attended the National University of Singapore. There, he was instrumental in enacting a historical change where until he joined the student union there, Koreans were not allowed to take a leave of absence when joining the military and said they had to leave school and come back. And he was part of the movement to enact the change where now students who join from Korea to universities in Singapore, they can take a leave of absence in order to join the military. Upon graduating, he joined the Korean military as an Air Force officer. He is known as a legend at Korea International School Jeju, being the first president of our class of 2016, which was also the first class to graduate our school. Welcome to the podcast, John.
Well, thank you so much for the introduction. And thank you for having me, Mr. Harris.
Thank you for joining us today. Hopefully today we'll be able to touch upon, you know, you graduating Korea International School Japan, which is very different from these other international schools most of our guests have come from so far, like ASIJ, St. Mary's Seisen. It's a very young school. It's actually younger than both of us, yeah. Which is something we can't say for many other international schools. We'll talk a bit about your time in Singapore, as well as how, you know, different events in your international school career has helped you as a professional so far. So first, can you tell us a little bit about what you do in the Air Force?
Yeah, so I'm currently working as a Republic of Korea Air Force interpreting officer. As you know, so South Korea and the United States have such a long history of military alliance, which dates back to like World War II. So we, South Korea and the United States do so many things together in a massive scale, especially in the field of military. And so naturally we need interpreters to when the two countries work together, right? So each branch of the military, Army, Navy, Air Force, all have their own interpreters. And that's what I do. As an interpreting officer, we kind of act as a bridge between Republic Korea Air Force and the United States Air Force.
And it seems like, you know, being an interpreter using both languages is something very conducive to someone who graduated from international school. Do you feel like your international school background helped you, you know, get into the position you are right now?
Of course. If I didn't attend KIS, must have been really difficult for me to become one. There are people who don't have any sort of an international school or studying abroad experience, but still working as an interpreting officer, which I think is super impressive. But most of the people, most of us are either from an international school or studying abroad experience in the US, UK, you name it.
That's interesting. So that was going to be my next question is, you know, there's not many international schools. So in your cohort, would you say more than half of your fellow colleagues graduated from international school?
In my cohort? So we have, there are 26 people in our cohort of Air Force Interim Officer. Out of 26, I think about 23 or 24 from either the US or UK. So they all have, they most of us have studied abroad. Mm-hmm. They most of us graduated from college abroad, remember right now, but yeah, 80%, more than 80% have graduated from high school that's outside of South Korea. One of my closest friends is actually from an international school in Bangladesh. Mm-hmm. He went to Dartmouth for college and then is serving as an interpreting officer right now with me. Most of us studied abroad sometime in their life. But I wouldn't generalize it because in other cohorts, there are a lot more officers who studied only in Korea. Mm-hmm. For some reason, our cohort is mostly consisted of students who studied abroad.
And when it comes to, you know, your work as an officer, can you briefly explain what the difference is in regards to, you know, every Korean male, with a few exceptions, like, you know, people who have physical disabilities of some type, have to serve. So how is your service a little bit different than how most Korean nationals would serve?
Because we're officers, we go through an extensive training. So most of the people who enlist as the enlisted, that's the term, the enlisted, they only go for, so their boot camp is only for like 6 weeks or 7 weeks max. For us, we have to go through training in the boot camp for 3 months. Mm-hmm. It's actually more than 3 months. It was 14 weeks. So we have a lot more extensive training. We have a lot more responsibilities because we are officers. Yeah, there's enlisted, there's NCOs, non-commissioned officers, and then there are commissioned officers, which is we have to serve longer. Most of the enlisted serve for a year and a half. We serve for 3 years. But that means so having responsibility means that we also have a lot of freedom. So unlike the enlisted, we are not stuck at base all the time.
It seems like it's a, you know, highly coveted position. So in order for someone to apply to become an officer, obviously you went the interpreter route. Is that the primary route, or are there various ways one can join as an officer?
There are various ways. There are so many different ways, actually. But, okay, I wouldn't say it's coveted, to be honest, because not a lot of people would want to serve for 3 years, you know. Of course, we have very different life, but still, serving in the military for three years, not a lot of people want that. So it used to be difficult to get into this Air Force officer program. It used to be, but now that lifestyle as the enlisted is improving. With now they get to use their phones. Now they are not treated as harsh as it used to be before. It's getting easier and easier to get in. It's not that. I wouldn't say it's highly coveted. Although the interpreting officer program itself, especially the Air Force program, is pretty well known among Koreans.
That's a great point you bring up about the cell phones. That was a huge change, right? Until then, you had to have someone else manage your social media. And so you're saying, in other words, because being enlisted is maybe not quite as harsh as it was 10, 20 years ago, as a result, less people are looking for the officer position.
That's exactly what I'm saying. And that is actually a problem that's Korean Launcher is facing right now. More and more, there's less and less number of people applying for officer positions. So,
and earlier you mentioned, you know, the boot camps for an enlisted is 6 weeks in comparison to your, you know, 3 months. As someone who has no knowledge in regards to, you know, how these boot camps operate, what does that look like in, for the day to day, at least for what you could share on this podcast?
You're completely cut off from the society for 3 months. That's we have our trainings at in Jinju, which is actually not that far away from Jeju. It's the southernmost part of the Korean Peninsula. Yeah, so basically you're cut off from society for 3 months. You hardly have any freedom. You hardly have any privacy. You don't have your personal time almost. Because for us, we need to, we share one room with four people. And our schedule is tightly controlled. And so once you're done with training, you're, you become the enlisted, but for officers, you need to pass these exams and tests, in order to become an officer. So, theoretically, even after going through 3 months of training, you might not get commissioned and you need to find an alternative, but that doesn't happen that often, but it does happen from time to time. That's what I heard.
And these tests are all done in Korean. So I'm curious, up to this point, you know, in your life, most of your testing has been in English, right? From high school onward in, you know, KSJ or Singapore. So was there a worry being an international school graduate that your Korean was like at the same level as your, you know, other people in your program?
So it is true that I'm not familiar with tests that are done in a Korean way, but not really. It wasn't that concerning because the tests aren't that hard. We all went to, you know, I'm talking about interpreting officers. We went to, we studied abroad and we went to a decent, we all went to decent colleges. The topics covered in the tests aren't that difficult. I mean, as long as, they're not kept that the level of the exams is not that high. It's intentionally done that way so that as long as we understand the concepts, and as long as you actually read the textbooks and stuff, you wouldn't really have a huge issue with passing the test.
Interesting. Because that's always been a major theme throughout this podcast, is being able to juggle those two languages, right? And in this case, Korean and English. I think all other guests have been, you know, Japanese and English. So that wasn't a big issue for you.
For the test of the boot camp, no. Everything in boot camp, of course, was really difficult in a sense that we hardly had any freedom, but like the content itself wasn't that difficult. You know what I mean? So going through the trainings and being stuck at a boot camp for 3 months, that part was difficult. But what you learned there, it wasn't that hard to.
That's interesting. And you know, so sort of shifting gears from your experience at the military, so your time at Singapore, you made a real, you know, big impact there for Koreans everywhere by helping, you know, change the system, right, at the school in regards to leave of absence. So can you explain to us a bit about what the system used to be and what kind of changes you lobbied for in regards to, you know, how changing it, basically?
Yeah. So before there was this policy change, Korean students were not able to file for leave of absence for going to serve in the military. And that was a huge problem for us because most of us usually take about 2 years time off during undergraduate studies, so that we can prepare for life after graduation, once we come back from the military, right? So that was a huge problem for us. And a lot of people I heard try to solve this issue, but unfortunately it didn't work out. How I decided to go about this was I tried to persuade the highest person in NUS to change this issue, because I think that I thought that that was the easiest way to get the job done. So instead of going bottom up, I tried to contact the most powerful person in the universities who can actually make a change to a problem like this. So I just got lucky. I got lucky that I was able to meet the president of NUS and I got a chance to explain this problem to him. And he was so nice enough to kind of listen to my proposal, and he was really opened in a way that he actually listened to a student and understood how this could affect a lot of students studying in NUS. And so he was really nice enough to contact Singapore Ministry of Education and a Korean embassy as well, brought about a change to this policy. So yeah, that's how it worked out.
And you were telling me off air a bit about how this is still an issue in some places like the UK.
You know what's funny about that is, so in order to become an officer in the military, you need to have an undergraduate degree. What that means is all officers have graduated from a four-year university program. There are a lot of interpreting officers who graduated from colleges in the UK because of that reason.
So interesting.
Because they can't leave during their undergraduate studies, they need to enlist after they graduate.
Yeah.
But I wouldn't say it's like that for all UK colleges, because that's what I heard. So I have a lot of friends from LSE, London School of Economics. I think they still have that issue, but I'm not too sure about Cambridge and Oxford. One friend I used to know who went to Oxford said that used to be a problem, but that was a few years ago. So I don't know if that policy is still there. Yeah. So I'm just saying this because it could have been changed. That's so I don't know how it's like right now, but yeah, if it's still like that, of course I would recommend.
Yeah. That's a great point that the paradigm shift is always so active, right? One year you can't have cell phones, now you can. And especially with COVID, it seems like the rules are constantly, changing. I want to talk to you a little bit about, your unique background in regards to being a graduate from, quote unquote, new international school, right? So far, again, as I mentioned in the beginning, the graduates of, as far as I know, ASIJ, St. Mary, Sacred Heart, Seisen, all those schools, Yokohama, have been around for more than 60, 70 years, right? They've been longer than you and I. Whereas Korea International School, where you graduated, very new school, still only 10 years, and you were part of the first graduating class. So, being part of something so new, what was your sort of approach when it came to, I guess, being a student at a new school? Did you feel sort of an inferiority complex compared to these other schools that have been around a long time, like Seoul International School, Seoul Foreign? And did you feel, on the other hand, certain advantages and maybe unique sort of opportunities that pose themselves because you're at such a new, robust, international school community here in the GC?
That's a great question. I felt both. So I did feel both the inferiority complex and the feeling of being able to do more things because it was new. I kind of use that inferiority complex as a motivation. I used to complain a little bit, but instead of complaining about how the school is new and how so many things are not there, I actually thought it was a positive thing as well, because I thought it was a positive thing as well, because going to a new school means you get to do so many things. There are so many new opportunities.
Mm-hmm.
Let's say if there's this club that you want to try, but since it's not there, you can start on start one on your own.
Mm-hmm.
That kind of opportunity. It's not that easy to start something new in a school that is established and that has a very long history, right? But to start something new, to start a new tradition, a new legacy that can be passed on to next generation so many years, I think that's, I guess what I wanted to say was that worked as a motivation.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, no, I definitely agree that the opportunities are definitely, from the teacher side of view too, this school has definitely revolutionized the way I look at things. So, I mean, just using an example of someone I used to work with in Honduras, she worked at another school, and we together, you know, started a lot of, you know, conferences and collaborations. And I came here and, you know, I was able to, in hindsight, I was very generous of the school. I arrived and basically I said, I want to go to Boston and I want to go to Taiwan. Here are the dates. And they're like, all right, let's make it happen. And she went on to, I guess I can say the school name. She's not there anymore. American School of Doha, which is, you know, a very top tier school, great programs, you know, both extracurricular and their, you know, curriculum. But when it came to MUN, she was like, let's go to, you know, this conference in Europe and let's go to this one in the US. And essentially, she was met with the response of, oh no, we go to this conference every year. Because this is what we've been doing for 20 years.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, that's, you know, that's cute that you have these ideas. And I remember after hearing that, I thought, wow, like I had these rose colored glasses that, you know, these schools that have been around for a while is where I want to be. But then I realized maybe it's not, because I know there's a lot of these schools where if I said something like, I want to start my own conference, they would just be like, okay, well, you know, maybe in the future.
Yeah.
So, I can agree with you from a faculty perspective that these opportunities, these new schools give you are quite, you guys didn't graduate till 2016.
Yeah.
What was that experience like being the first class? Cause that's pretty rare. And was there a lot of nervousness and trepidation with that class in regards to where you guys will end up? Because there was no precedence, right? We didn't know if you guys were going to, you know, go anywhere, essentially.
We were nervous all the time, especially during our junior and senior, a little bit of senior year. We were nervous all the time because we have no idea how much we should do here in order to get into, you know, these universities that we want to get into.
Mm.
We were anxious all the time. Our class as a whole was very stressed.
Mm.
And since we were, again, the first graduating class, we didn't have much freedom compared to our CAS students enjoy nowadays.
Mm.
You know, the school was very conscious of our reputation.
Mm.
If since it's a very new new school, if there was some sort of accident or if something went wrong and it hurts, it really hurts the reputation, right? We were a little bit micromanaged,
I'd say. You guys couldn't just even sign out, right? Back then.
No.
So you couldn't even leave campus.
No, we had to we had to get an approval from our parents.
Yeah.
So parents would be notified every single time we leave our campus.
Yeah.
And Our parents had to submit some sort of a form in order for in order for us to get out of the campus. So it was crazy.
That's totally different than now. I think you can just step out. And as you mentioned earlier too, this whole trial and error, as much as there are these, you know, magnificent advantages, like, you know, I want to go to Boston, let's go to Boston. I said, there were definitely trials that were errors. And it's funny, right? When you look back, it's like, we used to do, I don't want to be too specific, but I think anyone, you know, within the KSJ community or any of these GEC schools, so there's three other schools, right, in this area, all within 15 years, so younger than you and I, that have had endeavors of one way or another that they've stopped, right? They do something for a year or two and they go, okay, this isn't working out. Yeah. So it is a two-way street. On one hand, you know, these established schools have that stability, but maybe lack of innovation. Yeah. Whereas I think these schools, these newer schools, are innovative. They often have younger faculty too, who are more willing to take on extra work. Yeah. But they're also, because of that, they might make more errors.
I mean, yes, it would be a lie to say that I didn't feel any inferiority complex to like other established international schools in Korea. Would still like to say that I wasn't aware of that a lot, because I think it's just a different type of school.
Mm.
So these schools in the GEC, these schools were established with some sort of a special law, Korean government law. And so these international schools, once you graduate from these international schools, you get both Korean and U.S. high school degree. Mm-hmm. Of course, it would be different for NLCS and Branson, but anyways, for KIS, at least, we get both Korean and U.S. high school degree.
Mm-hmm.
For other international schools outside of Jeju, they are all considered foreign schools.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't, there needs to be some sort of, so schools outside of Jeju, international schools outside of Jeju are considered foreign schools. I think you need to have like 3 years or more experience of studying abroad in order to get
I think that's correct. Yeah, I have to be 3 years
and
abroad.
It's a foreign school, so you don't get a Korean high school degree.
Mm.
Meaning if you wish to transfer or enter a Korean university, you need to take this test called 검정고시. It's called 검정고시, like an alternative of getting a Korean high school degree. So I think it's just a different type of school. In addition to that, it's boarding, right?
Mm.
Most of the international schools on the mainland are not boarding. They're mostly boarding.
That's a great point. So it's not really apples to apples, but to a certain degree, apples to oranges.
Right.
But I'm sure you, like me, were always a little bit, you know, in the back of your mind thinking about these schools in Seoul, right?
Yeah.
But I think similar to you, definitely for me, it was more of a drive, because, you know, I hear people talk sometimes, you know, that, you know, they don't look at us the same. Mm. So that's why, you know, I think this is a good segue into a big part, at least a part of your high school included MUN, which in actually certain ways have connected back to what you do currently.
Yeah.
So can you tell us a little bit about what MUN is and how your experience with MUN has connected to your current work today in the Air Force?
Model UN is a platform where students can discuss global affairs related topics and issues. What's the fun thing, a fun part of this this discussion is that each student represents a country and basically acts as an ambassador for that country. When there's one global issue, you kind of discuss it in the perspective of that country.
Mm-hmm.
And so through that, not only get to learn about that global issue in a using different perspectives, you also get to explore all these different viewpoints on the same issue, and which kind of cultivates persuading skills, critical thinking skills, speaking and writing skills, and all of that. I was able to learn so many things and acquire so many soft skills through MUN when I was in high school. And that helped me both in college and in what I'm doing right now.
Mm-hmm.
And especially since KIS, KIS Jeju, hardly had any foreign students.
Mm-hmm.
MUN was one of the major ways I could practice English,
mm-hmm.
and was one of the main ways I acquired English speaking skills.
Yeah.
So it was just more than a school activity for me. It was like a mm-hmm. way for me to actually grow as a person.
Mm-hmm. I mean, 6.5 years ago, so you and I traveled to Boston together. So how would you say those experiences outside of Korea contributed towards, you know, personal growth?
Yeah, it did. I'm pretty sure this is the same for most of the schools going to boarding schools.
Mm-hmm.
Most of the students going to boarding schools. Once you get used to things
mm-hmm.
at one school and one place, you kind of, everything kind of becomes easy for you.
Mm-hmm.
It's everything. So you get used to so many things
mm-hmm.
that I guess this is the right word. So you get stuck in this bubble
mm-hmm.
where people next to you and you kind of think alike, and you don't really get to, you think that you're with people who are different from you, but you're actually with people who are very like-minded, who are very similar to you and who have almost identical background.
Mm-hmm.
And so you kind of become trapped in this bubble. But traveling to, let's say, Boston, we also ended up,
I think you went to Turkey, right?
Yeah, I did go to Turkey. That was with Miss Bigger. Mm-hmm. Trip like that is eye-opening because you meet people who are completely different mm-hmm. from you, not just racially, but I don't know how to put this. Anyways,
I'd say different income levels or something.
Yeah, different income levels. Yeah, different mindset, different
mm-hmm.
thinking, different backgrounds. Everything. Yeah. Everything's different. Even if you don't try to actively learn something from them, just by interacting with them, you just naturally learn and you realize how world is so big, how there are so many different people.
Yeah. That's encouraging to hear. And it makes me, you know, it obviously right now with COVID, we can't travel much, but it makes me think that, you know, once this COVID business is maybe not over, but at least, you know, dissipated quite a bit, we start doing those overseas trips. Cause as you said, people get comfortable. And I think even obviously our school is very homogeneous, but even I think at other schools that are heterogeneous, you're talking about a very, very narrow group of people sociodemographically. Like where I went to the American school in Japan, sure, there was, you know, a bunch of countries, but everyone was rich.
Yeah.
It made a big, or would make a big difference if schools like, you know, your ASIJs, your Shanghai Americans, your Singapore American, if they can travel to these conferences, not just the uppity conferences like Singapore. Don't mean to throw hate at Thiamin. I know I kind of always do, but I'm not attacking Thiamin, but there are these wonderful conferences in the United States, right, where you can debate against kids who go to public school, who quite frankly, they're pretty good. You know, just because they don't go to a $40,000 school doesn't mean they're not good at debate. So I think you bring up a great point that it's crucial, I'd say, for these international school students, whether it's KIS or ASIJ or Singapore American, throw those kids into these conferences where they can go up against public school kids and, you know, different, not just different races, right?
Yeah.
Different languages, but beyond that, different mindsets, different schooling and so on. All right. So you joined KIS in 2011 and you graduated in 2016. Can you tell us a bit about, you know, what was your most memorable experiences at KIS?
You know, all the trips we went, and all these, because I was a boarding student, so living at a dorm was difficult because we were micromanaged, but but at the same time, because it was difficult, it's so memorable. I got so close with so many of my friends as I was going through a hard time in doing boarding. This experience of changing our campus entirely. Mm-hmm. So before 2015, right? Only elementary and middle school campus existed, mm-hmm. but we had a completely new campus built in our junior
year. A new field too.
Yeah, a new field. Yeah. And this is such a beautiful campus. Mm-hmm. I have so many fond memories of, playing soccer in that field and all sorts of different activities in this newly built campus. All these small quirky stories and experiences, those are what make me miss this place.
Mm. That's good to hear. You miss it. Some people never come back and some people miss it. There's always a big range, right? It's a very intriguing thing about memories of high school. And, the home stretch here, last question I like to ask every guest is, what is, coming up for you? You're one of the younger guests we've had. So, for the next 40, 50 years, as well as maybe what's coming up in the next few years.
So my short-term goal is to move my base. We call it PCS, permanent change of station. Right now I'm located in Osan, United States Forces Korea is located in United mm-hmm. States. Oh, sorry. USAF. We call it USAF, United States Air Force. Mm-hmm. I'm wishing to go to a higher headquarter. So either Minister of National Defense or Air Force headquarters or the Joint Chiefs of Staff, which is like the highest headquarter in the entire Korean military. By PCSing to a higher headquarter, I get to experience completely different things. Like I'll by interpreting for higher ranked officers, I get to learn all these ways that a Korean military operates. Mm. So I might do that. I really don't know at this point. I'm still considering many different options.
It's good though, right? To have many options, right? Whether it's law, government agencies, strategic consulting. It's always interesting talking to you about, what you do is quite within, I guess, what I can share with the podcast, right? Things like war games, right?
Yeah.
it's very intriguing. And it seems to be that you're able to pursue a career conducive to your, interests and passions that you had from high school, which is definitely a blessing, right? It seems like sometimes people kind of just get jaded and they'll, nothing wrong with a business degree. I'm saying, I actually think it's a very stable degree, but there's sometimes people that will just get the business degree and just kind of do what they need to do. But it's exciting to see someone like you pursuing your passion, and I hope you continue to do that. Yeah, that takes us now to the end here of episode 65. Not quite sure which camera to look at. I guess, John, you can look at your camera. I'll be looking at the big camera. And that's episode 65, first episode in person. Thank you for being our guest, John Hong.
Well, sorry for being so verbose. I mean, I try to be succinct as possible, but
I think it was great. Yeah.
Thank you again. Thank you so much for having me as your guest, Mr. Harris.
Thank you.